Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Folks, remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Retweet us on Twitter at SQPN and leave us comments and help us get the word out about the show and grow our audience. But so we're really grateful when you help us with that. So let's talk about what's been going on. Last week, I had mentioned that my mom was in the hospital. She's home now, which is nice. Funny story. Not being in the hospital is funny, but the reason she was there. So just as a brief recap, she'd fallen and hit her head. She had some nasty bruises. My mom's in her 80s, so a fall is a bad thing. And then my brother noticed that she was having trouble reading, that she was like everything was blurry. And apparently, I think the doctor had told him that if she starts having trouble reading, that he should call an ambulance and have her taken to the hospital right away, which is what he did. And then she spent 4 or 5 days in the hospital. And because of COVID, no one else could be there with her. And she is suffering early stages dementia, so that complicates things. And they did all the tests and MRIs and CAT scans and dog scans. And sorry, they're under dog scans. I'm just making that up. They couldn't find anything wrong. They sent her home. She gets home. She's sitting there in my brother's living room or something. And he says, "What are those glasses you're wearing?" And she's like, "What?" He's like, "Where are your regular glasses?" Turns out, this whole time, she had somehow put on old glasses that had the wrong prescription. And so she spent 4 days in the hospital because she had the wrong glasses on. It's so crazy making as to be absurdly funny. So, I shake my head. So I thought I'd follow up. Thank you for your prayers for her. I mean, going to the hospital these days is a big deal because COVID stuff. That's where COVID people are. So you have to be careful with that. So I was a little bummed that she ended up having to go there and potentially be exposed. But that reminds me of when I ended up in the hospital overnight with because of my Fitbit. Right? Remember that, Melanie?
Yes, the Fitbit incident.
It's on my blog. It's actually still one of my one of the most popular posts on my blog. My story. People find it by looking up Fitbit in hospital or Fitbit and, you know, injury. I ended up woke up one morning and half my face was numb and we couldn't figure out why. And I was just going to go to the urgent care at our local doctor's office, and they got there and it closed for the day. And so I called their nurse helpline. They said, "Go to the hospital." And long story short, after I couldn't fit in the MRI machine, I stayed there all night. A neurologist came in and I was showing him, he asked how I sleep. And I said, "I sleep like this. I sleep on my belly and I sleep on my arm." And he's like, "What's that on your arm? Do you sleep with that?" It was a Fitbit. Turns out the Fitbit was, had been on a pressure point.
It was pushing on the nerves on your face.
It made half my face go numb. So I was in the hospital overnight because my Fitbit made my face go numb. So that went away. And I don't wear my watch at night. This is the thing I worry about. Like when you go to the doctor for something innocuous, that it's the medical conveyor belt,
the cascade effect.
Yes, it's just you enter the machine and it just pulls you along. You know, and then you're like, no, I want to get off. This is not that bad. Please stop. And yeah. Anyway, so my mom is fine, and we're all grateful, and that's good. And she it was not traumatic at all. I couldn't get a hold of her the whole time, though. I kept calling, and I got the wrong number, some woman, some other room, hospital stuff.
And now everyone's convinced that you were...
I'm the bad son, because I didn't call my mother while she was in the hospital. I tried. I'm not sure they believed me, but I did try.
I don't know that anybody believed you that you actually called.
I did. I called her phone, her cell phone. I called the room number, which I dialed the number they put in the message that my siblings put in the message. I dialed it and I got them. Well, I dialed it and it got a wrong number. They got a different room. It could have been my mom's roommate. She actually had a roommate. Like, is that weird? Like these days that they have roommates? I suppose they're testing everybody. Moving on. So that's fine. We're good there. Another thing that happened this past week is we got a new toaster oven. This is like peak suburban lameness. But
mind you, the old toaster oven we got as a wedding present, so it was 15 years old.
It was all like browned from like the smoke, and you know, just because it had been used every day for 15 years essentially, and it, all of the numbers like for the timer and the temperature were worn off, so you had no idea how much time or temp you were setting it for.
Well, I knew.
You knew out of. Yeah, I never knew. Like, you knew, like, sort of at 2 o'clock and for the temp, and about 3 o'clock or for the time is toast.
I know exactly where everything was.
Yeah, I know. And I had tried over the years to keep it clean. You know, you clean it out, clean out the crumbs, but it just got so crusted.
Well, 15 years of crumbs.
15 years of crumbs and sesame seeds over the past year. The girls, Bella and Sophie, are super into, every day they have sesame bagels. That's the thing. And so those sesames fall off into the bottom and then they toast, they burn there. And so if they don't clean them out, actually, I'm going to be better at it with the new toaster.
You know, people always, you say that, and for a few months you will be, and then you won't be anymore.
It's like when you get a new car and you're super paranoid about dents and scratches until the first scratch shows up and you're like, whatever.
Yeah, who cares? You just can't be that vigilant all the time.
I know.
You just can't.
So I'm super into getting the best I can afford things, like appliances and other stuff. Like, I hate buying the cheapo stuff that's going to break in a year or less.
We don't always have the same philosophy of consumer electronics.
I know, but I hate, like, I'd rather spend more now than spend half of that and get 1 year's worth out of a thing. You know what I mean? If you have to. If a thing is $300, or you can spend $100, but you have to buy a new one every 6 months, you're not saving any money, or every year. I'm exaggerating to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I got the several different places reviewed said this, not the best, because I'm not going to spend $500 on a toaster oven, but it's the Breville. And it's really nice. And
it is a fancy Cadillac of a toaster oven compared to our old one.
Well, yes. It also, I got the refurb, so it was less expensive. I saved like 25% off. So thank you, stimulus checks. But I'm stimulating the economy. It's not stimulated. It's nice. It's got the LCD, so you can like turn the thing and it tells you exactly how much time and exactly what the toast level is. And you can make pizza in it.
I will give it this. It is like 3 times faster for making a piece of toast than the old one was. The old one took like 10 minutes for a piece of toast. This one takes like 3 minutes for a piece of toast.
Yes.
So bottom line is, it's faster.
The one downside is it's bigger.
It is bigger. It takes up, I don't have the little space next to the stove anymore for like.
The cutting board to cut up the toast.
Yeah.
I know.
And other things.
That is that is a problem because we don't have anywhere to put that anymore. But we were although it did tend to attract crumbs and stuff, and then the crumbs would end up under the toaster and all that sort of thing. So that was maybe that helps a little bit there. But new toaster oven, yes. It's a little sad, but yes.
Probably the most exciting thing that happened all week.
Yes, probably. Although the last night, as we're recording this on Monday, because last night was the Super Bowl, and even though the New England Patriots weren't in it, the kids were still super excited. I actually wasn't really planning on watching the Super Bowl. This year, I just haven't been into football. You know, Brady's gone to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not on the Patriots. The Patriots were pretty terrible this year. And with the whole COVID thing, football was not as fun to watch. Like empty stadiums with piped in sound. It just wasn't the same. I don't know. Some people were into it, but I wasn't all that into it. But like, I only watched about half the season. Then I kind of gave up. But the kids were there. No, Super Bowl is now a thing. And even we, in the past, we've watched Super Bowls that the Patriots weren't in, which happened occasionally, I guess. And I'm going to be that obnoxious Patriots fan. And because it's over anyway. You don't have to listen to this anymore. Like Yankees fans. So the so we watched it, and it was fun because we could root for Brady and Gronk because we, you know, we still have loyalties there. And you know, the Bucks are fun. We call them the New England Pirates. And the game, it was a good game from our point of view. And the kids stayed up and watched it. They're old enough now that they can make it to the end of the football game. Although
for
today,
for
the most part, although today they were dragging pretty good.
Yeah,
I could tell that they were tired. And so between watching Tom Brady, they're really what they want to see is they don't really care as much about the football, except for the touchdowns, which are exciting. They wanted to see the ads. They love watching the sports ads, like ads, even just like during the regular TV, you know, during the season, they like the ads. So we watched the ads, and I showed Melanie some of them. Melanie didn't watch the game, but I showed her you some of them tonight before prayer time. So I think our favorite, our consensus is the Budweiser lemonade seltzer one where it's raining lemons. 2020 gave us lemons. And the Rocket Mortgage one with Tracy Morgan was really funny too. I think that the kids agreed with that. Both of them were heavily slapstick comedy stuff.
Not surprising.
People getting hit by things and falling off of things and that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
How did they all end up with your sense of humor? I don't understand.
Well, see, there was my sense of humor or no sense of humor. So they have my sense of humor. Actually, Bella's sense of humor is like a lot like yours.
Yeah, that's
Bella, true. She gets mad at me when I tell jokes. Like corny dad jokes.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even just like, although some of that's teenager, I think.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah. But, yeah. Sophie loves my humor. She's totally on Mike's side.
I don't understand. I think she's just, you know, buttering you up before she, like.
Takes me out. She is Kylo Ren.
You know, you gotta worry a little bit when your daughter's favorite.
Yeah, when your kid's favorite character is the one who kills the dad.
You know, I wouldn't sleep easy at night. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to like put my hand on her face. I'm going to get a lightsaber in the gut. I don't think I can do it. If she ever says, I'm not sure I have the strength to do what I need to do, I'm running. That's it. I'm out of here. Oh, yeah. Ah, run. So that's what we've been doing. So let's talk about food.
Okay, let's talk.
I have concluded that summer is the better time for food because summer is like in grill. We were talking about this at dinner tonight. We're trying to figure out what to make. It's like in when winter comes around here for us, like half of the things we want to make are like eliminated because we can't grill. When you can just fire up the grill, throw burgers and dogs on, or, you know, some meat, or, you know, the kebabs last summer. Well, that was the summer of kebabs. That was really
awesome.
Kebabs. That was good. You know, it's just, it becomes so limited, the flexibility. So that's, I want to move somewhere where it's warm. I can grill year round.
I don't want to move.
I know. We were just talking about this earlier about how I've experienced 50 plus winters. You've experienced 20.
Yes, I've lived here 20 years.
Yes. And so
so in terms of snow,
you're like a 20-year-old.
I'm a 20-year-old. Yes. I think snow is cool.
When I was 20, I thought snow, I still was enamored of snow. But now, no, I'm done.
I can't imagine ever getting tired of snow.
I'm like, there's how every New Englander at some point says, I'm moving to Florida.
No.
My brother's is planning on it.
No, I will never move to Florida. Sorry, my Florida friends. I love you. I just don't want to live there.
Well, it is the hurricane place.
Yeah.
Gators, hurricanes, swamps.
Falling iguanas.
Yeah. Okay, in all my time in Florida, I've never had an iguana fall on me.
Well, have you been there in the winter?
Oh, because they get cold and fall out of the tree?
Yes.
Yes. Cool.
My Florida friends have been sharing, like, falling iguana warnings. They had some cold weather this week.
Iguanicicles. Like, we have to worry about falling icicles. They have to worry about falling iguanas.
I'm telling you.
There is the palmetto bugs that were so big you could use them as skateboards.
Well, see, I'm from Texas, so yeah, I grew up with big bugs.
Palmetto bug is another word for cockroach, basically.
Sort of, yeah.
So I remember seeing one once when I was in high school. We were down there, and the thing was like a dinner plate with legs. It was huge.
Yeah, they used to get into the dog food when I was a kid.
You?
Yeah.
You had a dog? You had a dog.
We had a dog when I was little.
Yeah. 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 So,
and yeah, you'd go into the room and late at night, and there'd be like big scuttling. Yeah, ew.
Texas.
Let's talk about something pleasant now.
Texas has scorpions and sidewinders.
I have never seen a scorpion outside of like a nature center or zoo or science museum.
Like Jen Fulweiler must live on top of a scorpion colony or something. She's constantly talking about that.
See, I'm from Central Austin. Where, like...
It's too expensive for scorpions to live there?
Yeah. It's totally too expensive.
It's too high class.
It's too wet and swampy. Like, it's not desert.
Right. Where's that area, that northern area?
Yeah. It's a different small... I mean, it's a microclimate. Like...
Yeah.
Like, where my parents live is, like, creek bottom. Like, live oaks and cottonwood trees. There's a creek.
Yeah.
It's too wet for scorpions.
Whereas, yeah, north of Austin is all, like, giant... stone, desert rock.
I mean, the closest I've come to like actually living where scorpions live was when I was in Italy. Like a friend of mine woke up one morning and there was a scorpion in his boot that almost like stung his foot.
Scorpion's boot. That's very close to the Brady Bunch Hawaii episode.
Yeah, fortunately, he was like living in the basement. I was up on the fourth floor. There were no scorpions where I was.
Scorpions don't climb.
They don't climb. Evidently. I don't know. We never saw any scorpions.
On a podcast,
where we were.
Everybody's an expert. Scorpions don't climb above the first floor. It's a fact. It's a known thing.
I'm pretty sure that I've got a friend who's told her kids that centipedes don't climb above the first floor.
Neither do iguanas. So you don't have to worry about that.
they fall out of the trees.
They fall out of the lower branches. So.
Right.
So they don't have to fall very far.
Yeah. I don't think that's how
it
works.
Do the tails get frozen rigid, like spear points?
I don't know.
I mean, are people dying, like, impaled on iguana tails?
I can't imagine they are.
Okay, we're talking about food. Let's talk about food. We're getting a little punchy. So one of the things we made this week is... I made. I was at the grocery store at Bella, and I'd seen nice cod loin. There, it was really nice. We get salmon and halibut. That's our usual thing. And
haddock,
haddock, halibut. I don't know, a thin white fish.
I usually get haddock, but maybe
whatever the cheaper one is. I think it's haddock. Okay. Haddock is the cheaper one. Yeah. I always get the cheaper one. Anthony doesn't like salmon, so we always get a piece of haddock for him. And, but the salmon wasn't on sale and neither was the haddock. So, but we did see the cod and cod was on sale. So I got a big chunk of cod, a couple pounds of cod and brought it home because we decided, Belle and I decided we wanted to make fish and chips. And so I used the Cook's Illustrated fish and chips recipe, although I just did the fish. We did our typical cold oil method for the potato, for the French fries, which is the best. It's the easiest. It's not this. You don't have to poach. You don't have to blanch and double cook and all that other nonsense. It's straightforward. We've talked about it. So, but with a fish, it's like a cup of flour and a cup of cornstarch. And we've talked before, Lucy's got the corn allergy. So, and although some people said cornstarch doesn't have the proteins that you have to worry about, we still try to stay away from it. No, not take a chance.
You know, we've
been burned on that. So we're just until we find out she has no corn allergy anymore. That's what we're doing. So anyway, what do we do? So I ended up using a mixture of arrowroot and tapioca flour starch. Tapioca flour.
It worked fine.
It worked just fine. I did have to buy some Budweiser because it needed a light lager. All I got is dark porters and stuff in the fridge. So that wasn't going to work. So now I have three cans of Budweiser. I don't know what to do with.
I'll make beer batter bread.
Oh, there you go. So
it made a really good batter, I have to say.
It was really good. Yeah.
It was light and fluffy.
Yes. Crispy. It was, yeah, crispy outside, light and fluffy, wasn't heavy at all. And it stuck to it really good. It didn't flake off. Like, I hate when, like, you get, like, fried chicken or fried fish and the batter part just kind of flakes off as you're trying to serve it.
Yeah.
This was nice, solid. It was really, really good. And I misread the recipe and I made a double batch of batter. So I'm like, what can I do with this? Hey, I've got onions. So I made onion rings too.
I didn't think the batter was quite as successful with the onion rings.
Well, I think the problem with the onion rings is that by this point, the oil had been cooked the fries and the fish. And it was the oil that I'd saved from the last time I made fries. So I think the oil had given its all. So I think the oil wasn't as good.
Yeah.
By that point.
It was, something was lacking.
It was sort of a let's give it a shot moment of opportunity. I've got all this extra. I've got the oil hot. Let me just cut up some onions.
I think I would have, like, when I made onion rings that time with Anthony,
yeah,
I like dipped them in the batter and then tossed them in like a dry starch and then dipped them in the batter and then tossed them in dry starch again. Like it was a two-step process.
I think the batter would have had to been different because it would have just made a mess. Because this was a very liquid batter.
This was messy.
Okay.
It was like you stick it in a big, like you get a big brown paper grocery sack and you stick the flour in that and you like shake it up.
Oh, that sounds involved. I mean, those were really good.
They were really good.
Yeah. The first ones I made were okay. The first onion rings I made the other night were fine. It's the later ones got a little more burnt and a little more heavy. So I think, I mean, that might have worked too. The other thing I made was homemade tartar sauce. And surprisingly, Bella loves it. She loved the tartar sauce, which she's not usually one for anything of like very strong sourish tastes.
Yeah, that was surprising.
I think her taste buds are evolving because, you know, her grown up taste buds are coming out.
Possibly.
So it really, the simplest tartar sauce you can imagine was 3/4 cups of mayo, 1/4 cup of pickle relish, although it called for dill and all I had was sweet, but it worked.
I'm not really a big fan of dill anyway.
Yeah. And then 1.5 teaspoons of white vinegar, 1/2 teaspoon of Worcestershire, and then salt and pepper. Mix it up, let it sit in the fridge for 20 minutes, and then it was ready to go. And really good. And then, yesterday, I had gone to the grocery store, and I grabbed some, like, frozen popcorn shrimp. And Sophie's like, is there more tartar sauce? I'm like, I'll just make some more. It was like, it comes together in, like, 5 minutes. It's really awesome. The tartar sauce might have been the best thing.
It was really good on the popcorn shrimp, like the whole 5 popcorn shrimp that I got.
You snoozed, you lost. You were on the phone with your dad and
my mom.
Your mom and the kids were.
Nope. Nobody thought to bring me a bowl of popcorn shrimp.
In the bedrooms? We don't really have food in the bedrooms.
Uh-huh.
I got the look. Moving on. I will remember to save you some next time. You did get some guacamole, though.
I did?
Okay. You didn't get any.
No, I didn't get any guacamole. Wait, there was guacamole?
No. Anyway.
Okay, I see how this goes.
It was just store guacamole. It wasn't the good stuff, like the homemade stuff.
We need to make some guacamole. We got a lot of chips.
We do have a lot of avocados. Yeah. All right, let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. I should play like a timpani like at this point. I'm never going to remember to do that. I finished Rhythm of War by Brandon Sanderson, finally.
How long have you been reading that? Like months?
Like
years?
No, it seemed like years. It was like a month. It was like 5 weeks. Or like 6 weeks, maybe even. I think I started it in December. Yeah, it took a long time. It was a good book. It's such a good series. And this book is so good. I mean, in a fantasy series, you've got things like PTSD and we don't call it split personality syndrome anymore, but whatever it's called, the mental health issue. But it's integrated into the magic and other supernatural things of the world. And it's so good. It's such a great series. I'm really When I first started the first book, I was confused at first because there's a lot coming at you in the very beginning. It's actually kind of in some ways like the Silmarillion. Like I don't know what's going on here. Like what's all this? But as I got into it and started figuring out, it just is such a really good series, and I highly recommend it. So the Rhythm of War by Brandon Sanderson. And now I want to go and start reading some of the other books that he wrote that are in this. He calls it the Cosmere. It's the Sanderson Cinematic Universe.
Multiverse.
It's the multiverse. And the stories that intersect a little bit, like the worlds connect, but they're literally separate worlds, like separate, you know, it's multiverse. So kind of cool, actually. So that's I did finish reading that. Now you finished reading Thrawn.
I did four books, I guess, because there's the first trilogy.
Yep.
And then the first book of the second trilogy, which unfortunately the next book isn't due until April. And then the next book after that, who knows, like another year. I hate reading like part of a series and then
series.
Stuck in the middle and I want to know more. I want the rest of it now. It was really good. I love the way that the Thrawn character it makes you experience all of these, you know, great conflicting emotions and like divided loyalties. And he's just really a great character. I especially really liked the first book of the Alliances trilogy. No, the Supremacy.
The second trilogy. Yeah. Which tells his origin story. It tells of him growing up among his people.
I really liked that a lot. It was good.
It's the least Star Warsy of all of the novels.
It's not until like the end of that one when you finally get he makes contact with like the Empire.
Yeah.
Or the
Republic.
Republic. Yeah, it's before the Empire. It's Clone Wars era.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, I now all the kids are reading or rereading or audiobooking. Yeah, it's
It's funny because we at the dinner table, we're except for Lucy, she's not.
Yeah, poor Lou. She's a little bit too young for a lot of these things. And so she's kind of on the tail end of like all her big brothers and sisters are able to do things and she can't. It's kind of
right.
Youngest kid syndrome.
Bella read her the first Harry Potter, right?
The first Harry Potter, but she hasn't read any of the rest of them.
Right. And then there's the Young Wizard series and then the
right. And Bella really wants to like read some of them to her. And I'm like, I think it might be a little bit too intense for her still.
The Young Wizard ones?
The Young Wizards.
Or even the later Harry Potter stuff.
Right. I told them that they'd have to wait on Harry Potter because I didn't want her to get too.
Yeah. I mean, even the first one at 7, that's a little on the edge.
Right. And Lucy tends to be a little bit more
sensitive
and fragile and easily scared. And I don't want her to have nightmares. Like she got nightmares from Star Wars Rebels, like the Grand Inquisitor really freaked her out a lot. And I think I want to limit the number of things that really freak her out to like.
Yes. You don't want to put her off of books and that sort of thing either.
Right.
Yeah. So. But at dinner, we're sitting there around having these great conversations about the Thrawn books, which is like, I'm living the dream. This is the Star Wars nerd dream.
It is pretty geeky nerdy here around here.
My whole family. Yeah. So, and you've been evangelizing these books. People are telling you they started reading them.
Evidently, I got a comment from a friend on my blog that said she had started reading them because of me. I love it when people tell me that they've picked up a book and read it because I recommended it. That's like the best thing ever.
Mm. So
then I went from that like super high paced action
sci-fi
adventure sci-fi to historical novel set in medieval England. Like I keep going back and forth between like
Whiplash.
Right. So this one is called The Corner That Held Them. And I think it was written in the 20s, I want to say. It's not a recent novel, but I think it's been recently re-released, maybe.
Okay.
So it's about a community of nuns in England in the Middle Ages at the time of like the Black Death. And there is no protagonist in this novel. Really, it's just about the community, like from the beginning, like the founding of the community. And it just kind of follows the people in it. Like, you know, nuns come and go, they die. You have new elections of abbesses. They get a priest who, well, their priest runs away during the Black Death. Like, so many people die. Like, everyone dies, right? And so they get this guy who comes, who isn't actually a priest. He studied at a monastery and then never took orders, but he's pretending to be a priest.
Okay.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, for 20 years so far, right, where I am in the novel now, they've not had a priest, or they've had a fake priest pretending to be a priest.
And so, yeah.
So no sacraments.
Okay.
But it's, I mean, it's very interesting. It's like very immersive history, like what it's like to be in one particular place. And because they're Benedictines, there's this stability of place. You get a couple of nuns who come in from a house which is dissolved. And of course, you've got new vocations coming in. And you know, there's the villagers who live on the monastery lands. And there's at one point, one of the abbesses goes to a christening.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little bit of like her relatives, like she's the godmother. And then the priest goes and visits a local noble because he heard that they had a hawk and he wants to take up hawking. The priest.
Yeah.
Who's not really a priest. So you get a little bit out of the convent occasionally, but mostly you're just in this convent immersed in the like lives of the sisters. And they're not especially like holy all the time. I mean, but they're not like horrible either. They're just kind of ordinary people living their ordinary lives.
Right. Well, religious aren't particularly, they're not going to be saints.
Right.
All of them, you know. That's...
Right. And I mean, there's the sort of internal dramas, you know, they accidentally elect an abbess who nobody really likes her. But she's one of the transfer nuns from the house that's been shut down. And she's always like bragging about how her former community was so much better than theirs. And so she was. But sometimes it's like these sort of what do you call it? Like the humble brag sort of thing.
Right.
Like your community is so peaceful. When you have the next selection for the abbess, well, everyone knows who's going to win. There's no contention or argument. It's going to be a unanimous vote. And so when they actually have the election, everyone thinks, well, I'll just like throw her a pity vote because like, but also kind of to prove like that we're not like the unanimous people that she thinks we are. And she gets enough pity votes that she actually becomes the next abbess. And they're stuck with her for like the next 8 years. I mean, it's this like little tiny details like that, but it's so human and it's so intriguing. Like I picked up this novel last year at some point and I read like a chapter or so and it was really slow and I put it back down and I read something else and I was looking around on my Kindle saying what should I read next, and it kind of popped open and I thought, well, I'll probably read a few pages and then I'll go on to something else because I'm going to get bored. And I found myself really getting sucked in.
All right.
So, yeah, it's The Corner That Held Them.
The Corner That Held Them.
It's not a fast-paced, high-intensity read, but on a human level, it's really interesting.
So we go from that to, what did you watch this week?
What did I watch? Oh, I know. I actually watched a movie this week.
You did?
Yes. With all the talk that we've had recently of sea shanties, a couple of friends recommended this movie called Fisherman's Friends. And it's about a group of Cornish fishermen who form a band. Like, they just sing sea shanties together. There's 10 of them.
Cornish as in Cornwall.
Cornwall.
In the Great Britain.
The south of England.
Okay.
Right. Which, if you tell Cornish people that they're English, they will...
No.
Disagree vehemently. They're yes. Cornish.
They're Cornish.
I met a Cornish cook once when I was in England. Anyway, yes. So it's about the big record executive who comes to town, and he hears them and he falls in love with them, and he decides that he has to sign them, and his adventures in trying to sign them with a major record deal. And I really wanted to love this movie because it had so many of the things. I mean, it was quaint English fishing, Cornish fishing village, sea shanties. But unfortunately, I was rather disappointed because it was a very paint-by-number romantic comedy.
Let me guess. He was the rich guy, the wealthy guy, who he was very urban. He came from London to the backwards town and met the daughter of one of these fishermen. And at first, they didn't like each other. And she was very put off by him.
Divorced daughter. And she calls him a bad word, which her daughter like repeats when they first meet him, because he and his buddies are driving the wrong way down a one-way street. Of course.
Of course.
Like, you know, the rich guys that they are.
Yes. And then, let's see, they gradually fall for each other. And then she finds out something that he was doing, but had stopped doing. But what it was something that she would really dislike. So this miscommunication ends up breaking them apart until he can finally come back and win her back through some grand gesture.
Exactly. 100%. I really felt like there
Paint
was
by numbers.
Yeah, there was no real character development, because it was just like plug in the plot elements from your favorite romantic comedy that you've seen a million times. And there was nothing really new or interesting. I mean, the fisherman dies and it's just kind of like he's like weeping and mourning and crying and comforting the fisherman. And you're like, you've only been in town for 2 weeks. You don't know these people.
Right.
You're like heartbroken over the death of this fisherman, which, I mean, yes, sort of every man's death diminishes me because I'm involved in mankind. But it was just laying it on with a trowel a little bit too thick. I loved the music. And if you like romantic comedies, like if I had gone into this knowing it was a paint-by-numbers romantic comedy, I don't think I would have been disappointed. I was expecting something a little bit more.
Right.
I was expecting like an actual story about actual people with actual conflicts, maybe. And it just, I was disappointed because it...
They were cardboard characters.
Yeah, it was not...
But if you like sea shanty music and the pretty coastal Britain, and
I mean, it has all the tropes. And if what you're feeling in the mood for is a feel good romantic comedy and with no surprises, this is the movie for you. if I had known that was what I was getting into, I would have.
So
I would not have been disappointed.
Bad movie. It's just not the movie that you were hoping for.
I was really hoping for something a little bit more fresh and original.
Mm. Where'd you watch this?
Netflix, I believe.
Okay. I really want to get more into the BritBox stuff. I'm really have been into British.
I mean, this was
TV stuff.
This was based on a real story too, which is what made it especially disappointing. Like they took a real story about real fishermen
and turned it into a rom-com.
And like, yeah, just like there must have been a real story under there somewhere, but
right,
it was lost.
Yeah, there was probably a group of Cornish fishermen who got signed to a major record label. And that's probably the heart and soul of the real story. That was the remnant of it that was left.
Right.
Oh, well. So
the world will never know what the real story was.
The world will never know how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop.
So what have you been watching?
So I've watched a few things. So I watched on Netflix, I watched this series called Spycraft. And it's one of these limited series where each episode in this confronts one particular aspect of spying. And so one of the episodes was about poisons. Another one is about cyber spying. One was about sexpionage, they called it, you know, so the titillating stuff like that. You know, it started with Mata Hari, but also, you know, kind of.
So this was history?
Yes, it's historical. This is a documentary series. Sorry.
Okay. Documentary. I missed that part.
Sorry, I forgot to say it. So it's all about the spy. It's kind of light, you know, it's not all that, like, I've read a lot of spy novels, you know, I've been sort of and I've read a lot of articles on, you know, national defense and that sort of stuff. I know some of the stuff already, so it's not very, a lot of it is kind of familiar. And it has, sometimes it has that repetitive feel that some frothier documentaries have, where they just kind of say the same thing over and over again, or they show the same little scene. But
oh, that drives me crazy.
Yeah. But there was,
in other words, I shouldn't probably not watch this.
No, you wouldn't be interested. I mean, some of it was interesting. Some of the stories, like it was the one about the Russians who poisoned the Russian dissident in England I think it was Southwark, with the polonium. You know, that which was this horrible thing, that the crime against humanity, because it like totally messed up the town of Southwark. Yeah, there was a lot of that. I was a little disturbed by the sexpionage one, because they had actual footage of these people who were taped, and some of it showed a little more than I was expecting. So I, yeah. Plus, it was all totally exploitative. Like, ooh, wink, wink, we're doing an episode on this. And I was like, eh. Like, yeah, there are ways that they could have done the episode that were not like gutter thing that they were going for, the lowest common denominator sort of way they did it. But it was some of the stuff was interesting. Some of the early stuff, I think the first episode and the second episode, like there was, the first episode was about surveillance. And there was a couple interesting stories about how, like there was one about how the Russians used the theremin, the theremin is the instrument where it makes that UFO sound with white waving
right.
your hand near
you,
it.
You play it like not by touching it, but by
moving your hand, near it.
Yeah. Right.
So the guy who invented that was Russian, and he actually invented a surveillance device for the KGB, which was like a passive antenna. So what they did was they gave this gift to the U.S. ambassador, which was like the Great Seal of the United States, but hidden inside it was this passive antenna, so that when they're doing their surveillance sweeps, they're not going to pick up on a transmitter because there's no transmitter in it. But every time, you know, of course, they knew that he would hang it in his office because it's this big, awesome gift. And so they would point a device at his office from across the street, and it would cause it to resonate and pick up sound and retransmit it, or somehow, I don't know, they didn't, that's one of the flaws. They didn't explain how it worked. They just kind of told you that it did.
That's disappointing.
It was disappointing. But it was interesting. They had a couple like that. There was another one where they were, I think it was one of the other Warsaw Pact countries, like Czechoslovakia or something, where they got them to install listening devices in the ambassador's shoes. So his maid, who took care of his shoes, was actually a spy, and she installed, she would change the tapes out every morning. And so the batteries in the transmitter every morning. And so when they finally, when the CIA finally figured out that they were being surveilled, they were trying to track down where the transmitter was, and they kept moving around through the embassy, wherever the ambassador was. And that's how they finally figured it out. So there was a couple of interesting things I didn't know before we did. So it was okay that way. So I also watched The Godfather Part 2, Hot Shots, The Godfather Part 2, which was an amazing, awesome movie. If you want to hear me talk about it at length with a couple other people, it'll be on the Secrets of Movies and TV Shows coming up, I think next week is what I get it scheduled for.
I think you like that even better than the first one.
Yes, it was. There's a big debate among aficionados about which one is a better movie, but I think this was an even better one. De Niro was in this one. He played the young Vito Corleone. So it sort of takes place as sort of a prequel and sequel to the first one.
Right.
So you see Vito's origins, but then you see Michael's continuing career. And the acting, the writing, the directing, everything about this movie was amazing. And so many things that we think of as this is what movies do have their origin in this movie. Like period movies, like that take place in a gritty period, like in the early 20s, have this yellowish greenish look to them sometimes.
Uh-huh.
That's from this movie. They're copying what the cinematographer did in this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
You know, I watched it 20 years ago, and more mm-hmm. than 20 years. It's been a long time.
Yeah. This is my first time watching it, which is surprising. I mean, the funny thing is like Vito Corleone is my grandfather's age when he, at the beginning of the movie, you know, he was born when they tell you how old he is and what the year is. I'm like, that's when my grandfather was born. And he comes to this country at the same age my grandfather did the first time. And there's so many interesting parallels. There's actually one scene when he goes back when he's in his 20s and he sees his grandmother and she spitting image of my grandmother. I'm like, that's Nana. I'm like, this is my life. I mean, I'm Sicilian, so it stands to reason. But wow, it was interesting. A lot of interesting Catholic stuff in it, too. Like the mm-hmm. first movie starts with a wedding. And like the first half hour of the first movie takes place at the wedding reception.
Right.
The second movie starts with the first communion. And so the first half hour of this movie takes place at a first communion. And it's interesting how the movies progress. You know, they have a wedding, a funeral, a first communion. There's a baptism in the first one. Like you have all the sacraments present in it. It's really fascinating. Except for ordination. I don't think there's an ordination.
Is there an anointing?
Yes, I think when someone's dying. I think in the first one, with Vito dying, there might be an anointing. I'm trying to remember. So, really good, obviously. But, yeah, The Godfather. We are going to do The Godfather Part 3, although Andrew Hermes, who does the shows with me, said that he doesn't consider it to be canon.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. I could perhaps understand why. I mean, these two movies, the first and second movie, just form a perfect a whole. You know, when the second movie ends, it completes the whole story. You know, so adding more on later, you know, is debatable. So then I watched from one of the best movies of all time. This wasn't a horrible movie, but it wasn't a great movie. I had seen the movie a few weeks ago called Now You See Me, which was about magicians it's a heist caper movie with magicians, Woody Harrelson, Aaron Eisenberg, Mark Ruffalo, and a few other, and Morgan Freeman, and a few other people who I don't know their names. And so this was the sequel. And it just suffered from all the same things that sequels usually suffer from, which is they tried to revisit what everyone loved about the first one, but they tried to do it bigger and don't succeed. And mm-hmm. one of the great things about the first one was these big gags, like these things, you see them do the trick and you're like, how in the world could they possibly have done that? And then they explain to you, it gets revealed as part of the story, how they did some of them. Not everything. Some of the stuff gets left there. But in this one, it's like they do that, but it's not really it's like, well, that wasn't all that great of a gag anyway, like it, sort of lame. And then they do these things that just are impossible. Like it's at one point, the Aaron Eisenberg character, he's standing in the rain doing a trick and then he needs to escape. So he falls backwards. You're looking from an above shot and he falls backwards and he turns to a puddle and all that's left is his raincoat. It's like that's. How is that even? That's like it's not even plausible. There isn't a way you could do that. Like unless like there's a trap door. No, because it was outdoors. It's like I don't know. It wasn't as good. I was a little disappointed. Yeah. So that's what I watched. We'll see what I watch this week. I'm not sure. I'm kind of I've got a lot of movies that are on my list of things to watch. Oh, I've also been playing. I played Vader Immortal on the Oculus Quest VR, the VR headset thing. Oh my gosh, that was so much fun! It was so cool. Like you, at one point in the game, because it's a VR, so you're in the game, and you're in a cell in this Imperial holding cell, and then the door opens and Darth Vader walks in and walks right up to you. And like I'm standing there looking up at him, you know, as someone who was, speaking of being afraid of things, having nightmares, I had nightmares as a kid about Darth Vader. I mean, like coming into my room and standing over me.
Mm-hmm.
That was took me back. My heart, I gotta admit, my heart started racing a little bit. It was very real, the reaction. So that was pretty cool. And then I played it once. Then I played through it comes in chapters. I played through the chapter again with the broadcasting it to the TV so that the kids could see what I saw, and they enjoyed that. It's a whole story and stuff, so it was a lot of fun. There's lightsabers. It was kind of awesome. And at one point, you're standing on a cliff overlooking a big drop off. That was fun. Yeah. So that's it. I think that about does it.
Yeah.
We didn't have much else to profound to talk about. The gospel readings or stuff like that. There wasn't. It's Monday, so we're so far enough removed from the Sunday gospel that both of us forgot what the homily was. Father did have, the four things that Tom Brady does that we're supposed to remember for the faith life. I couldn't tell you what any of them were at this point.
No, I don't remember.
I'm sorry, Father, but yeah, unless I wrote it down.
He tried valiantly to make it.
He even did a reminder at the end of Mass.
Yes.
Yeah. It was hard. Anyway, so let's wrap that up there. So we do want to, before we do, take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Ramona F., Joey C., Mel P., and Isaac F. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets on all the shows at StarQuest. And remember, StarQuest is a 501c3 nonprofit. We are a Catholic apostolate. And so, your donations are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law possible. This does not constitute tax advice, et cetera, et cetera. Consult your tax professional. But your donations are tax deductible. We are a nonprofit organization. So now's a great time to become a StarQuest patron because thanks to a generous gift from a StarQuest supporter, when you start a new Patreon monthly pledge at sqpn.com/give, the first 3 months will be matched by an equal amount from our donor. So if you've been thinking of becoming a StarQuest patron, now is the time. Visit sqpn.com/give today. So if you got feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can let us hear that feedback from you by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.